Feels so good to be back. I feel like I've been on the road for 2 months, and I'm just letting myself back into my house again for the first time. All the furniture just where I like it. It's Coast to Coast Live, comforting the afflicted, afflicting the comfortable, bringing faith to the doubtful, doubt to the faithful, friend to the friendless, odor to the odorless, calling lame radio to rise and talk. It was an honor to do as much fill-in as I was allowed to do for Art Bell low these last couple of months. But I missed Coast to Coast Live. I missed doing this early show. I felt like we were just getting things up and started. If you're hearing this right now, this is a live show all across North America, into Canada, wherever you're hearing this is live, unless this is not today in June and it's a later date, in which case this is a tape, but never mind that part. By and large, if you're hearing this, this is live, unless you're listening on StreamLink and Archive, but I digress. This is going to be a really interesting show. I'm looking forward to Dr. Wayne Dyer coming up. Last time he was on was with George, but you heard him on many times on Coast to Coast. He's a very interesting guy, and he'll take lots of calls and some challenging questions. I know coming up later on, we'll discuss our previous lives, the choices that we make, he believes, as we transition from our previous lives into this one. What are the things that are happening in your life right now, which are as a result of your past life? What did you have, what vote did you have in what is happening to you? Might you have chosen the life you're living right now based on something that happened to you in a previous life? It's a challenging concept, and I will challenge Dr. Wayne Dyer on that coming up later on. But I always find him very affable. We'll talk about the evil that lurks on the earth. Is Al-Zahr Waqqawi in hell? And other essential questions of life next hour with Dr. Wayne Dyer. Also coming up, Andrew Kalerick will join us. You know him. He's on all the time. In fact, his last appearance here was back in March, but I could have him on every week. Andrew Kalerick has a particular beat that he does better than anybody. In fact, of all the people that regularly send email to Coast Live, story suggestions, etc., nobody is more on target, email to email, than Andrew Kalerick. He's tracking privacy, computer problems, complications that come from the lack of legislation that might be needed to protect us. How many corporations do not have our best interests at heart and yet have all of our private information available. And we'll talk specifically about some of the lost computer information that's been popping up in a lot of different stories and some other things that are in the news. I must have gotten 5 really interesting stories from Andrew Kalerick this week, and we'll chat about that a little bit later on. After we do some crypto news and some Ian mail, lots of response to Dean Kuntz last week. I hope you heard it. If you didn't, I really encourage you to go back into the archives and listen. Not everybody enjoyed it. And I'll share one of those emails with a challenge. Coming up next on Coast to Coast Live, this is Ian Punnett.
Listening to Coast Live with Ian Punnett.
So, why should we be worried about data collection by the government? Well, if you have applied for government benefits, if you have served in the armed forces, been a government employee, if you've incorporated a business, if you've purchased property, heck, if you drive a vehicle, then you should know that very likely both local, state, and federal governments have your social security number, your date of birth, your residence, names of family members, employment, and health details. And that just begs the question, is how safe is our personal information in the hands of our government? Some of the horror stories of the last few weeks are enough to make us reconsider just how much faith we can put in these computer systems. More on that coming up with Andrew Kolarik and what we might possibly be able to do about it. On Coast to Coast Live, this is Ian Punnett. You know, I don't know, and Andrew, feel free to round this off to the nearest dozen. I get so many great emails from you in a month, and I mean, I really meant that when I said earlier, we can have you on, like, all the time, because these stories, maybe it's my imagination, they seem to be popping up more than ever about computer privacy and what's going on the Internet and what our government or private industry is or is not doing about it. I mean, it's getting to be that frequent.
It's now becoming epidemic, and people are now starting to realize that this isn't just, you know, these guys up the street or somebody else's brother. This is it's now, you know, when the Veteran Affairs issue hit,
right?
You know, you've got 26 million people now affected.
Well, I mean, there hadn't been a time in the not so distant past where if you had been talking about this issue in front of people who maybe weren't as, you know, far along the curve in the story as you were, they would have looked at you like you were wearing, you know, a tinfoil party hat and right, and hiding from the government underneath every porch. And so now it's got to be like this has become such a mainstream story for really maybe for the first time people are becoming as aware as they should be of the perils of all of this private information on computers that are not secure.
Well, let me rephrase something you just said. You called it private information, but
well,
it's not private anymore. Once somebody collects it, stores it, processes it, transmits it, it never goes away, and it's being shared regularly.
But your correction is perfect, but isn't that an indication of how we think differently about how the people will treat that information? We think that if they take that information from us because they're requiring it for, say, you know, as you said, like to incorporate a business or to apply for a job, that somehow they would treat that kind of sacrosanct. Like, you know, they knew that this is something really important. But that's what we're learning is they really don't think of it as anything important. They think of it as public information you can get anywhere.
Exactly. In fact, a lot of these organizations, even though they have policies in place, every one of them, they have privacy statements, they have security manuals that say you're not allowed to do certain things with the data and you're not allowed to access things, they have not taken a hard look at what they're actually doing. In other words, an employee who has access has full access. An employee that has partial access can ask another employee and get full access.
Yeah.
The data is not being stored in a way that you can segment and prevent other people from gaining access. You know, like the employee that took all of these veterans' information home wasn't allowed to work from home. Okay, they have teleworking programs where you can work at home via, you know, a virtual private network, dial-up connection, etc.
Go into the mainframe from home, but not actually do the work on your own PC.
Exactly. He was forbidden from doing that. He wasn't on the list. And so what he did was he just said, well, fine, I'll just copy the database, and I'll take it home and do what I want.
What would he possibly need with 26 million names at home anyway?
Well,
what is he doing? Do we know?
Good, good development and design process, you only need a small, you know, maybe you need a couple hundred names, you know, a couple hundred records to maybe do some kind of database migration or set up some new forms or whatever various programming functions he may be doing. But the only reason to take the entire database home is if he's doing some kind of analysis, he's doing stuff at home he shouldn't be doing. You can blame the employee, but I blame the administration. I blame the people who think that computers are the end all.
We didn't have computers
once upon a time. We had card files.
I want to go back to when you said the administration. Whom do you mean by that?
Well, in the case of the Veterans Administration, the management staff.
Okay.
But all of that falls under the Office of the President. It's an agency.
So do you believe this is some sort of philosophical outcome from a position by the administration on this?
They're spending lots and lots of money to improve their security and their information systems and so forth, but they don't really understand the concept of security. They don't understand compartmentalization and segregation of access, you know, controlling those things. What they're doing is they're making their life easier by processing more transactions.
See, now, I would guess that this is true, that that's more accurately said about, say, the VA, because the VA people are going to be there whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president. Most of those people don't switch offices, right, except for very few people at the top.
Exactly.
So this is some sort of systemic problem within governmental bureaus.
Yes. In fact, it's the employee that took this data home still hasn't been fired. He's in the process of being dismissed.
Well, that takes a while, even with something that seems as obvious as this. Unless, you know, he can offer or she can offer as some sort of defense, look, my bosses do it, or we do it all the time. We know it's not, you know, it's not part of our protocol, but we do it anyway because it's the only way we can keep up with our jobs. And so he might be making some sort of argument that way. Well, what other examples do we have? We know the VA one got a lot of publicity, but what else is out there that's alarming you in terms of our public/private information?
Well, you're going to really like this one, Ian. Last year, the Department of Energy had their system cracked at their nuclear weapons agency. 1,500 people working there had their information stolen. Now, this is the National Nuclear Security Administration system that was hacked. Okay? The file contained all the personal info on the contract workers. So security numbers, date of birth, security clearance level. Now, how about that one?
Yikes.
You know, who has access to what?
Right.
No one of the contract workers were notified of the breach. So they're just going about their lives happily. And the story just surfaced, even though this took place in September.
Well, okay, but can't we look at some of that and at least hope that this is a bunch of teenagers who are flexing their, you know, computer internet prowess, and they just want to show everybody what they can do, like Matthew Broderick in, you know, War Games. This is, it's really not, they're not going to do anything with that information. They just want to see if they could do it.
Well, I think that the world has now changed and moved away from this exploratory process. We now live in a globally connected world, and we have competitors out there. We have, you know, other nation states. We have other corporations. Industrial espionage has been going on for a long, long time. And if you assume it's just kids, then there's nothing to worry about. However, if you assume that it's not kids, maybe it's a foreign power, maybe it's a Middle Eastern state, they now have contact details of these contract workers. Now, that puts their families at risk.
Right.
Blackmail, kidnapping. You know, maybe we can pick one of these guys up and they know something that will further our own program. That
right.
sort of thing.
Even if it's just another piece of the puzzle. Even if they don't know the whole picture, they can... Yeah, they can squeeze people here and there for information. Well, do we know of any examples of have it started to pop up yet of anybody using the information from that recent 26 million, you know, name list from the VA? Do we know of any? Have they said yet that people who are on that list have already become victims of identity theft or that sort of thing?
No one that I'm aware of have surfaced. However, at the website for the Veteran Affairs issue, there's a discussion about, you know, what should I do, what happens, and, you know, you'll find this one real interesting. One question on the FirstGov website that discusses this, somebody, or the question is asked, can I get a new Social Security number? In other words, maybe I want
right.
to be preventative here.
Sure.
Right?
Proactive, best defense is a good offense. Change all my numbers so that when they tried to create a profile using my information, it would be worthless.
Exactly. And that makes really good personal, you know, rational sense.
So the answer for that would be yes, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Well, here's the response. Okay, I'm going to only read a part of this. The SSA will not issue you a new Social Security number as a precaution. Okay, and then it goes on to say some other things. The SSA assigns a new Social Security number in rare cases and only if the number holder provides evidence that the old number has been used with criminal or harmful intent. In other words, you're screwed.
Right.
You got to wait for somebody to hurt you, injure you, come and get you, destroy your finances.
Right. Clean out your accounts and then come and see us.
But you know what? It's not just money. There's been people who have had their identities taken and criminal offenses. You know, these people have been made felons even though they didn't commit the crime.
Right. Yeah, just because something they used somebody else's information, and next you know they're getting arrested on the street because of something that somebody else did with their profile. So those are bells that are hard to unring. What can we do about it? I mean, is there anything? I mean, we know that we give this information out all the time, and the genie has long since gotten out of the bottle then by your description anyway. So if tomorrow I'm going into, you know, have to write down this information in some government office somewhere, I might as well, because this is long since been lost in the system anyway, right? I mean, there's no point in me not writing the information down, is there?
Well, let me put it this way. What's important is the data, okay? Our personal data. I don't care if it's a computer system or a card catalog or, you know, just you keep personal notes. The data is important. Now, organizations choose to collect, process, and store it, okay? They choose. They make a conscious choice. They can choose not to as well. So that's the first. I want to make sure that everybody understands that we've decided somehow through momentum or whatever that all this stuff we're going to collect, we're going to gather, and we're going to keep forever, even if it's wrong, okay? Now, as far as how you take care of that, understand there's no absolute right to privacy because we don't own our own information. So what I'm suggesting, and I suggested this in my last book, Cyberterrorism, Political and Economic Implications, one of my ideas, and call it a silly notion, but I think we need to have a national discussion about this, is that we make information a property right, just like your house, your
right.
car, your cash. It's a property right. So we have all this established law already, all this case law that says I have recourse, I have the ability to say you can't use this, etc. And let's create a delineation between what is public and what is private data.
I think that's a great idea. Have you ever talked to a legislator about this?
I've spoken with several folks. I talk about this in many of my presentations that I give. In fact, I should be in Washington next month at a roundtable discussion where more people will hear this idea.
I think even at a state level, you could do this.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, different states have different ways of looking at property rights. So you could write a state law that says, in this state, this information, your name, your address, your phone number, that's your property. You own it. And we already see, there's already some precedent for this in the... remember that whole thing about whether or not our cell phone numbers could be proprietary to the original issuer when, you know, Singular or, you know, any of these other, you know, I can't think of suddenly any other cell phone people, but whenever they would come up with a package plan and you got one number, and then as soon as you switched to another plan, you had to get a new number. And they finally said, no, from now on you get to keep your number. If you go back and forth between plans, that's you still get to keep your number. So in a way, there's already precedent for this, that once you've identified yourself with something like a phone number, that it's yours.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. I'm not saying all information, all data needs to be private. It needs, you know, what I'm saying is we need to create a discussion that involves business, government, privacy advocacy groups, citizens, everybody, and say, look, what is reasonable? You know, the fact that I have to pay a couple dollars extra a month so that my name doesn't show up in a telephone book.
Right.
When I'm the one paying for the phone.
Right.
Okay, is that my information or is that their information?
I think that's a great thing. We really do need to push that. I think that it would be a forward-thinking legislator or assembly somewhere that would start pushing that forward on behalf of the people.
Well, listen, if there's somebody out there in your audience that wants to talk to me about this, that's a legislator, that wants to spearhead this, call me, talk to me, I'll help.
And I think that there are examples of this for government. When you look at, say, if you lose a checkbook, you could, even before a single check has been written, you could call your bank and they can cancel those numbers, right?
Absolutely.
They're more than happy to, because they know proactively that makes much more sense. Once the horse is out of the barn, what do? So you've dropped your checkbook somewhere, so you canceled all those checks so that they're not responsible and you aren't responsible. And or for credit card information, it's the same thing. So if you can do that, they should be able to do that with your Social Security number and any of these other computers. Now, just in the time that we have, any other story popping up in the last week or so you want to mention real quick?
Well, I've got one that I'm going to say is going to be the next major disaster. Okay. You know, the veterans is a sorry state, but here's the next one. The IRS has announced, it did so in March, that it's begun issuing contracts for debt collection. It has three private collection agencies that's going to start this summer. Taxpayer data has to be used in this collection process, which means these subcontractors have our personal info. Now, the IRS has been cited over time for not taking our personal information seriously in securing it. And I'm going to tell you that in 2008, this is going to jump to 10 firms.
And what are the laws that might prevent somebody from one of these new subcontractors from taking home that information to their computer and losing it there? I mean, that really, you put them all together, it's a scary possibility. Well, that just means you'll be back, Andrew. You know that.
Absolutely. Hey, anytime you want me, Ian, I'm here.
Well, just keep sending us the stories and keep us up to date on privacy and computers. You can find out more on Andrew Kolarik at the website coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Wayne Dyer is back since his last appearance with George. Your past lives determine where you are now, next on Coast to Coast Live.